Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and on today's show, I'm joined by Sarah Weber of Sarah's Sweets in Austin. And Mike McCary has an exciting announcement about a new cake class. So whether you're rolling out your cookie dough, waiting for something to firm up in the fridge, or on your way to deliver your latest masterpiece to a client, let's get this show started to inspire and encourage you along your sugar arts journey. Sarah Weber is with me now. She's a super talented cake and cookie decorator who teaches and competes and volunteers as well. And she has her own business, Sarah's Sweets in Austin. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
I'm really happy to have you on the show because I've just been watching all the work that you've been doing and seeing you. You're constantly mentioned about all these shows that I've had other people on talking about your fabulous cakes. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you've been up to?
Well, it's summer, so it's starting to slow down because in Texas, we can't really make that many cakes in summer because they all melt. So I'm headed into a bit of a break, but just finished up the Day of Sharing here in Austin and did a demonstration there for painting, which is one of my favorite things. So that's a lot of fun. And then just got, before that, the San Antonio show, which I think Jackie talked a lot about. Mm-hmm. So it's been an exciting spring. It's pretty much nonstop.
I'm always sad to miss the Day of Sharings because they were a big part of my life when I lived there. But I can justify the show, but I can't really cost justify, you know, 800 pounds to fly out for the weekend for a
right.
Day of Sharing.
Yeah.
But it looked awesome.
It is a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, and I've been, you know, your paintings are amazing. I was just trolling through your page while waiting to start this. And that lemon cake was gorgeous. I'm going to have to link to that because that was just beautiful.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm really enjoying painting. I guess some people would say it's a shame to spend so much time on a painting that you just eat, but that's like most of our stuff, right? Where yeah. We spend hours and hours and hours and then just gobble it up in a few moments.
People are always doing this. They're always saying, you know, it's the people on Facebook or whatever, on social media, when the non-cake people, the muggles, the people who aren't, and they make those comments all the time, like, well, why all that effort just for something that's being destroyed? Or I could never, it's really common, I could never eat that, I could never destroy
right.
that. And I've always just said, but that's part of the art, the part of the point of what we're doing is to destroy it. And that's kind of why I got into it, because I was filling my house with way too much ceramic and stained glass and beading. And
right.
So, yeah, it is part of it. But that is, it's hard for us to educate other people on that.
Yeah, I think it's one of the more confusing things about our art form is that it's so different than other forms of art, I guess, other than performance art. Which might be kind of fun to like expand sugar arts where we're doing like legit performance art.
Heather Sherman been on the show talking about how, as far as she's concerned, when she's serving a cake, it is a sort of performance art because mm-hmm. it takes into account, there's a presentation, there's a gathering, there's a cutting, mm-hmm. and then there's an ingesting. And that is part of, you know, with all of your senses, you are creating a piece of performance art that you may not necessarily be there for the entire performance of.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like you're giving this medium to other people and letting them do what they want to do with it. And I do think people enjoy sugar art in different ways. You know, some people really make it into the centerpiece of an event, and other people are just like, oh yeah, I got this really beautiful cake, but it's not really the focus. We just wanted it as decoration, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's obviously because so much of it goes to weddings where there's a whole ceremony that's going to it. But then some of these corporate cakes, they're probably just sitting there and people come and take a picture and it may not even have a ceremonial cutting.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting.
And with the cookie art that you're doing, where are you finding people ordering like the big display? I mean, obviously, I've seen your competitive displays. For the cookies, are people actually ordering?
I would say the more elaborate painting pieces that I do are for competition, because a painting might take me a whole day just to do the painting component of a piece. But my cookies, I get folks that are that will pay, you know, here I can get people to pay $10 for a painted cookie, a good amount for a small cookie. What I tend to do is mix painted cookies, a few detail painted cookies in with some simpler cookies so that the whole set doesn't take me, you know, 50 hours. But the few detail painted pieces will take a while, and then the others are quicker.
Mm-hmm. That's something I've taken Mallory May's classes. Well, actually, on Craftsy, I bought both her classes, and one day I'll get around to actually watching the second one. But she was talking about that, and I hadn't thought of that before, and that you have your two or three focal cookies, and then everything else is something, you know, basic and simpler on that color scheme. And I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, like I've done a couple corporate orders recently where I have a one centerpiece cookie that is, you know, 5 by 5, 5 inches by 5 inches, and then just a bunch of little cookies that I can crank out really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so are you getting a good number of orders for that then?
Yeah, I am. I think it's about connecting to the right people, the right customers that want those types of orders, not just your average kid's birthday party necessarily, or trying to convince them. Like if they say, I want a underwater theme, then presenting it like, here's a great option. And a lot of times they don't know what they want. So they'll hear that and they'll be like, yeah, sure. That'd be great.
I always wondered how people got into like getting the corporate. Is it one of these things that once you've got one, your name gets passed around?
Yeah, I have gotten contacts through contact, and they have constant client orders. For me, I'm a little nervous about it because I don't know if I want to do that kind of work, that kind of art, but I'm going with it for now.
If it's paying bills, it's paying bills, right?
Yeah. And if it does work for me, then I'll find one of my fellow bakers to pass it on to.
Yeah, that is one of the nice things about the Austin group is that there is so much handing off and collaboration and, oh my God, I'm underwater with this. Can someone come make me a flower?
I feel like it's a great community for that.
Mm-hmm. And such huge geography with it too. I mean, when I was there, it was one of these things that we talked about, and maybe one day I'll actually have time to help do it even from over here, but putting together a sort of a database of people and sort of chunking it out geographically, like North End, South End. When I think about the geography and just compare it to where I live now, it'd be like half the country of where I live now would just be described for the Capital Confection. This keeps coming up on
Central Texas.
Yeah, it keeps coming up on the podcast, the scale differences, just because living here has been such a big difference to, you know, if I drive, you know, 3 hours for a cake show, everyone's shocked. Whereas, yeah, you know, we of course we drove to 3 hours to go to Houston or Dallas or San Antonio or whatever.
Yeah, just for lunch. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know that I ever drove that far for lunch, but I have driven across Austin to go hang out at Kyla's house, which should be a 40-minute drive, but really was like an hour and a half if there wasn't bad traffic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I drive 40 minutes to see a friend all the time.
Yeah, I know. It's just the scale. Like, I drove... Yeah, when I posted it on Facebook about the horrible day I had on Saturday trying to buy strawberries, because what I didn't know, another cultural issue, was apparently during Wimbledon, everyone has to have strawberries and cream.
Oh my gosh.
So I just went to the grocery store on Saturday with my kids planning to do this strawberry pie for like a little mini bake-off thing that some of my friends were doing. And I thought, I'm gonna make a chocolate ganache on strawberries in a pie shell, because I saw that online. I'm like, that sounds good. That sounds easy. I can do that when my husband's traveling for work. And I get to Tesco, which is like, that's like HEB. Okay, like that's the big grocery store. The big, big, big one. And I get there and there are six shelf sections that should be strawberries. And they're empty. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, just how is this? Oh, yeah. So then I got in the car back. We bought her some other stuff. We came home and dropped it off. And then I said to the kids, well, you know, there's this other brand of store, Morrison's, that we haven't been to because it's like sort of two towns over. Never been there before, but except while traveling. So, you know, let's go see if they have strawberries. And they didn't, which was also shocking. But then when I was telling people that I went to Morrison's, everyone was freaking out. Like, you wait, what? But that's all the way in Camborne. And I'm like, yeah, it was 20-minute drive. 20 minutes?
20 minutes.
And I'm just like, right. The people here, 20 minutes is a really, really long way.
Wow.
Yeah. You couldn't get people to drive 20 minutes to a class here.
Yikes. That's crazy.
Which, speaking of, are you, I know you were doing, you've been doing the teaching with the events. Are you doing teaching on your own as well?
I'm doing a class in San Antonio, actually, which is a long drive.
It's a long drive, yeah.
I'm going to do that at the end of the summer. And that's probably the only teaching I'm going to do in the fall unless something pops up. Because I've got a lot of orders actually in the fall already lined up. And I'm going to take fair in Orlando. So it'll be a busy fall.
Mm. Plus, you have a day job.
Yes. So as a psychotherapist, the summer's pretty slow, but the fall's also really busy for psychotherapy. I primarily work with young adults, college students, and I'm near the big university. So I get a lot of college students on my caseload.
So that must really impact how much else you can do with the cake stuff and the cookies and stuff.
Yeah, it would be nice if the cake seasons were opposite of my busy therapy seasons, but they're pretty similar.
Yeah, probably because everyone wants back to school this and Thanksgiving and Halloween and all that stuff is coming up. Yeah, all
the Christmas. Yeah,
all those things that cause stress in our lives are things that people want cookies and baking for. I mean, even people who don't do any of this stuff for a living, just like Christmas baking is one of those insane things that sometimes we're just expected to do as moms. And I do it, so like I don't, don't get to complain. And I mean, I used to do a lot of surveys when I still lived in the U.S. for the brand. Like I would be on the panel for like Nestle or whatever companies, and they really always just wanted. I mean, they hammered us with surveys starting around late October about the Thanksgiving and Christmas baking. How are you baking for 6 to 10 people, or 50 plus people? And I'm like looking at some of these things, going, oh my God, I do a lot of baking and it's not even registering on these things.
Right, because it's so much.
Yeah, and that's not for professional. That, I'm not even talking about people who have a business or selling anything. Right. That's just what...
That's just family.
Yeah, that's just the family expectation.
Man. Yeah, I found that once I started making money at this, I stopped making it for families and stuff for holidays.
Do they still expect free stuff at holidays, though?
My family doesn't. They learned.
Do your kids like watch you put cakes together that come out the door? Because my kids always, I've learned that, particularly Peo, when I was still used to do a lot of Bake-A-Wish cakes, Peo would watch these big cakes get created, go out the door that she wouldn't get any of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for the first little while, when I first started baking from the house under the cottage food law, my son was really excited about it. And then after the first few cakes, he was like, I don't actually like cake. He was like, I think your cake tastes really good, but I just don't really like it.
I've known people like that. There was it was one of those ways I'd pave my way into places was I would bring delicious treats. And then I was volunteering. I don't know if you know who the Biscuit Brothers are.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so I was volunteering for them, and I would bring goodies to them, and Jerome, who plays Dusty, does not like sweet things at all. He only likes savory things. So that's why I came up with parsnip cookies. I'm like, I would make some...
I've actually tasted your parsnip cookies, I think. Way back?
Yeah, probably way, like, long, long time ago. I think I did bring some to a club meeting.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's where that came from, was trying to go for something closer to a vegetable. And he tried those and he said, okay, I still don't like sweets and I still don't like cookies, but if I was going to eat a cookie, this is pretty good. And I'm like, that is the best I can hope for from this man on that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much when I give my son cake or cookies and he tastes it and he's like, this is actually good. Then I know it has to be phenomenal because he doesn't like cake or cookies. So yeah, nobody in the house really eats my leftovers or my scraps these days. Wow. Yeah, and my son likes to hold it over my head that he's the one who gave me the idea to start doing sugar art And so anytime I'm really busy, he's like, you know, this is my idea to start this company, right? I'm like, yes, thank you.
Does he want a dividend or?
I don't know. I think he's just like rubbing it in that I'm so busy and not playing with him. And somehow that was his bright idea.
See, normally I would suspect that someone was doing that to get cake, to get some of what you're making.
So yeah, I think mostly he's just learning the art of guilt tripping.
Whereas my kids just want the food, and we've hit a point where Robin, if I say, I've made a cake and you get to have some, she just goes, oh! So it's like so rewarding. But then, to be honest, if I also said, and here's a piece of candy I fell that picked off the floor, she would also go, oh,
it's so awesome.
It's very low bar with that one.
Yeah, I wish my family weren't so discerning, because we end up composting a lot of scraps around these parts.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure you could make friends with neighbors.
Yeah, I need to start like a rotation with all the neighbor houses for my cake scraps and cookie scraps. Yeah.
Cookie scraps? Wait, how do you get cookie scraps?
Well, I only roll my cookies twice. Oh. I don't roll them any more than twice, and I prefer to roll them once. So when I make dough, I can only roll them twice, then I always have cookie scraps. And I just go ahead and bake them off and collect them. It's kind of like that trend that started where you can buy the brownie butts.
Oh.
Which are like the edges of the brownies or the broken brownies. So I always have cookie scraps.
I hadn't even thought of that. Because I'm cheap and I'm going to keep rolling. I mean, typically when I'm doing my chocolate rolled cookies, I'm rolling them in cocoa instead of flour.
Uh-huh.
So they just get, I mean, maybe they get a little drier, but not that much. There's so much butter in them, so it's not too much. But yeah, obviously with the flour ones, they get drier towards the end. But
I don't use any flour on mine, so I use the cold method. So, which is one of the things that I think helps a lot with shelf life of cookies, being able to have them out and drying when you're doing these kind of fancy decorating cookies. That I can let them sit out to dry long enough and they don't dry out, because they started off really, really wet because I don't use the flour method.
Okay, so what is the cold method? Just having chilled dough, or?
Yeah, so when I'm done making the dough, I put it between two pieces of parchment or two pieces of silicone mats, whatever. I'm using parchment currently and building up my silicone mat stock so that I can use silicone mats instead, just because they're reusable. And roll it out while it's fresh out of the mixer, and rolling into slabs and then putting it in the fridge. But I have to wrap it in the slabs before I put it in the fridge so that it's not drying out in the fridge as well. So I'll stack three or four slabs in a cookie sheet, wrap it in saran wrap, put it in the fridge, take it out, cut my first round of cookies, roll out the scraps, and do that one more time, chill, cut, bake. So that I never have to use flour, because it's being, you know, parchment keeps it from sticking, and fat in the cookies keeps it from sticking to the parchment. And then I don't ever have to use flour, or, you know, I can work with it pretty easily while it's cold too, which means it's a lot easier to make Franken cookies and things like that.
That sounds cool. Yeah. My kitchen right now is not cool enough to even think about that.
Yeah, it's pretty tricky here. I do most of that in the mornings when it's still, you know, only 90 instead of 110 here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you have AC.
Yes, my house isn't in the heat of the summer here. My house doesn't get above below 80 though.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's
because the AC is pretty. It's chugging along, but that's about as cool as it can get it.
Our Austin kitchen was in the shadiest corner of the house.
Oh, that's nice.
And just where the AC went. It was the hottest room when the heat was on, and it was the coldest room when the AC was on, just because of the way the ductwork went.
Oh.
So, I mean, but, in the winter, I could just keep the heat low. So,
yeah.
My kitchen was never hot. Whereas here, my kitchen in England, with having no AC, when we have a heat wave, day one of the heat wave is not too bad because we have double brick. So if it's been cool in the house and I've trapped the cold, you know, if I get the windows all open, I'm always yelling at people, get down there and open the windows at 7 o'clock in the morning. Someone go open my windows. Because Corn goes off to an air-conditioned office, so he doesn't remember it, right? But I'm like, someone go open my window, whether I'm baking or not, someone go open my windows. And so I trap the cool air in. And on day one, that works because the sort of the double brick and everything keep it fairly well chilled. But day two and three of a heat wave, when the heat has permeated the bricks, there's no cooling it down. And I tried to make a pie last week, the pie crust went from... Yeah, I was using a pre-made pie crust. And you know how you have to, like, let it sit out for a minute, because if you try and roll it, it'll just going to crack. It went from cracking to goo in my hands in less than 3 minutes.
That's crazy. It sounds like Texas.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, yeah, because we're hitting temperatures now here in the high 20s Celsius. Let's see, 28 is 82. I learned that when I lived in the States.
60, okay, so like 90.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 16 is 61 and 28 is 82.
Yeah.
Palindrome.
That's why I have so much respect for all of my fellow Texas bakers right now doing wedding cakes.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because I do much more non-traditional cakes, so I don't get the calls for summer wedding cakes. And I just, like, say a little prayer for them every morning, making their 10-tier wedding cakes when it's 110 heat index here.
Yeah.
I'll stick with my party cakes and my painting.
I'm finding excuses right now to shift more to cookies than cakes because the cookies and the particular royal icing cookie is stable.
Yep. Yep. I know. I don't have any stress because I have 250 cookies this week. And if I had even one wedding cake, I would be very stressed.
250 cookies is also acceptable for stress. That's...
Yeah, but it's a different kind of stress, you know.
They're probably not going to melt. I was looking at your page and how you'd posted someone else's cake having melted in the car. And I was like, yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing that happens. We lived in Las Vegas. We had pull-top soup cans explode in the back of the car when they got left in.
That's no joke. You feel like you're in the oven.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was that whole Mythbusters thing where they tested the Pillsbury dough exploding. As soon as they started doing it, I'm like, yeah, that's going to happen. You are going to explode that can. Yep, I see. And then, of course, they did it. And they're in California, and they were surprised. And I'm like, really? Because, yeah, the Pillsbury cans will pop if you leave them in a sunny, hot car.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't keep anything in our cars here.
No, yeah. It will melt. The soup cans were forgotten. I'd been to the grocery store, and it was one of those things. You know how you always have a bag in the back, particularly back when their bags were
heavy
thing?
Stuff.
Yeah. And so it's like I had emptied the stuff out, and I can't even use that I had kids as an excuse. I was just, because this is before we had Peo, so I just simply forgot that there was a bag there that had two chicken corn chowder chunky soup cans. We know this because we smelled chicken corn chowder chunky soup for 3 months in that car.
Oh, gosh.
And at least they were in the bag. Like, it didn't go all over the car.
Yeah.
But so Corn went to work, and this is when he worked at UNLV, and he parked in that giant sunny lot. And again, in Las Vegas, this is one of those things. Cake people in Las Vegas need to even be aware that the pavement radiates all the time. So even when the sun's gone down, you are getting heat in your car from below. And these giant expanses of pavedness in the desert are like, you're like driving on a hot plate, and you can't just leave your car for 5 minutes with a cake in the car or a CD in the car or like, I remember back in the days when you'd go to Blockbuster, cause I'm old, and they always, Las Vegas Blockbuster had a melted VHS tape on display. Please don't leave our tapes in your car. So, I mean, things dried faster though. That was the where caking was easier in Las Vegas, because if you needed something to dry hard, it was going to dry hard. You could make a thick fondant thing, and 2 hours later, rock hard.
Yeah, I don't have much. I would say in Texas, I mean, in Central Texas, not South Texas, but in Central Texas, our humidity is higher than most people north of us are used to, but it seems pretty reasonable to me because things dry relatively quickly here. Especially in the summer.
Mm-hmm. As long as it's not tornado season. When you get those arms of those tornadoes through, I was making a Green Lantern cake once, so I was trying to do the mask.
Hours passed, hours passed. That would just not set. I had to call. It was for a friend, and it had in exchange for her doing some babysitting for me. So, like, it wasn't paid anyway. But still, like, it was still a thing of value for someone. And I had to call her, and I was like, I know you need to pick this up on this deadline. I'm going to give it to you with the foil support underneath. And if it stops raining, you might be able to take this foil support out. But I'm like, I just cannot make this dry. I mean, it's not like hitting it with a hairdryer makes it any better. It just softens the fondant.
Right. Yeah. Especially, yeah, if it's moist outside.
Yeah. And even if I'd owned a dehydrator, which I didn't, but even if I'd owned one, and even if it had fit in there, it was such a swamp outside. That was one of the big hurricanes. I can't remember which one. It was one of the ones that was hurting people in Louisiana, and we were just lucky to get the arm of it where we were. But it was like we were going to have 5 days of 100% humidity. I was not getting this Green Lantern mask dry at all. It just was not going to happen. I can't even imagine people trying to do wedding flowers.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I would say I have enough humidity to not trust fondant things.
Yeah.
I just go straight gum paste because I can't take the chance. I'm not a gambling person.
Yeah. I had put like Tylose into the fondant, but it wasn't enough.
Yeah. Drying out fondant, at least in this climate, even when it's not raining, makes me too nervous.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't.
I don't think
mentioned I'm anxious?
Yeah. Well, that's back to your day job then, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I learned how to manage my own anxiety so I can help others. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I need some of that.
I know at the day of sharing this weekend, I think everybody but Colette Peters was the headliner, so to speak, but everybody else was fairly new to presenting in front of 100+ people. And everybody was like, I'm so nervous. I'm like, that's the one area where I've been doing this a really long time is managing anxiety. I know how to help with that. Here, let me teach you some deep breathing techniques. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. So we did some deep breathing before everybody presented in front of 100+ people.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Breathing helps regulate that central nervous system. So it can keep a lot of things from going awry.
Mm-hmm. One of the, I should play it in this episode, is I have a little cake formation I recorded to remind people to just take a minute, whatever you're working on, sit back and breathe.
Yeah. Step away from it for 30 seconds.
Those of you who are actually working on a project right now, you're deep into it, you're working really hard, I want you to pause for a second. I want you to sit back, close your eyes, take a deep breath. No, come on, do this with me now. Sit back, close your eyes, deep breath. Working really hard. Stuff may not always be going well. Maybe stuff is going great. Whatever's happening, I want you now to slowly open your eyes and look at what you've made. Okay, maybe it's still got some problems. Maybe you're not done. Look at what you've made. You're so good at this. You are going to rock this cake. You are so amazing, and I have faith that you're going to get this done and everyone's going to love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love all your cake formations because as a psychotherapist, I know that affirmations and positive perspective help so much. And so I read them and my inner therapist is like, yay, yes, oh. We're helping cakers not take things too seriously and stress out and, you know, keep perspective. It seems like it's all about keeping perspective. I try to practice that whether I'm competing or doing an order. It's one of the things I keep coming back to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. It's one of those, like, particularly because I do so much for kids or for donated stuff. Constantly reminding myself, the line I frequently use is, no child has ever said to me, I could not possibly eat this cupcake for it has inexpert piping.
Right, exactly.
Like, never happened. No child has ever said, oh, this cake has elephant skin fondant. I just can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never. I'm just not even going to do it. No. Yeah, I know.
But then you go to compete and, you know, someone like Nick Lodge is going to look at it. And you're like, must get the fondant perfect.
Yeah. I mean, my attitude on competing, as I've learned over the last few years, is that it's really about my work. But if I'm not having fun designing it and creating it, at least for part of the time, 50% or more, then at the end of the competition, I'm not going to get as much out of that experience if I didn't enjoy the process. Mm-hmm. Because the judges are awesome, but at the end of the day, if they don't like it or it doesn't meet the standards, then I'm pretty much just going to be disappointed if I didn't enjoy the process. But if I had fun designing it and it's meaningful to me and I learned something along the way and I enjoyed creating it, then if I don't get favorable results, then I at least got what I wanted to out of it. I got so much out of it, and the award or the feedback or whatever was great. Or if I didn't get an award or didn't get good feedback, that's something I'll learn. But at the end of the day, it's all about my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't. I mean, I did compete to win once and I did win. So, but that worked out well. But if it hadn't, I did the 2009 Austin Cake Show was my first Austin show. And it was, bugs were put in my ear that if I had entered that same cake in the show cakes and it had been a bit taller, I would have placed or won in show cakes. And so then there was this expectation the next year to do show cakes. And I kind of felt like, well, if I'm going to do it, I want to win. And I really did get myself in sort of a head spiral of have to. And Paya was 3 at the time. So that was hard. She was like, this was at the hardest point with her, home all the time. Tantrums were epic. Potty training was happening.
Oof.
Yeah, so like, I mean, this was the sci-fi cake that did win first place in show cakes at Austin. And people, you know, look at this, particularly, again, the non-cake people look at it, how long did that take? And I'm like, well, 4 months of about 12-hour days every day.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because I was out to win. But the thing is, halfway through it, I hated cake. Like, I just, I was miserable doing it. And you know how, like, you know when you live in Austin, and there are 3 weeks twice a year that are really pleasant outside.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And it's right before the cake show. And I was feeling like, man, I've got this little kid and I'm not taking her anywhere. And so then I had all that typical mom guilt thing that we all have. And then, but it's okay. So I won. So it was legit. But what if it hadn't been?
Right.
Right.
So that would have been depressing.
Exactly. So the next year I thought, I'm going to let this go. I'm going to do, because next year was comic books, and I'm like, I'm making a Wolverine cake, and it's going to be my cake, and it's going to be what makes me happy. I'm going to put, it's going to be goofy and weird, and yeah, I care about the result. I would like to place, but it's okay if I don't. And so, like, even there where I hit the point where I had to be at the show to volunteer at 8 o'clock in the morning, it was 4 o'clock, and I hadn't done. I'm not covering the back. Just not going to cover the back. Just not going to do that. Ellen, who was the volunteer manager at the time, Ellen needs me at the show. I'm going to go sleep.
Yeah.
And I took second on my, you know, half efforts. People thought I was disappointed. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm so happy with this, you know, because I enjoyed this process much more. I still didn't get to go outside with my kid, but that's why I stopped doing show cakes. Because after that, the year after that, I was like, no. I'm going to go outside with my kid at some point during these 3 weeks that are nice.
Yeah, I know. I've definitely been learning that lesson too, like how much is enough for me and then where to let it go. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's true on orders too, because I could spend an infinite amount of time on an order and I'm not going to get paid anymore. And the longer I spend, the more disgruntled I feel.
Yeah. So
finding that middle ground where it meets my semi-perfectionist standards, but it's also reasonable and balanced between work and play.
Mm-hmm. With a donated cake, part of the reason I like donating, because then you don't have that whole, I've exceeded my hourly wage because I'm putting too many hours into this.
Yeah.
When it's a donated cake, it feels like, but I'm giving more. And somehow my brain works well that way. It just doesn't bring any money in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think when we take money out of the equation in a lot of aspects of life, it really changes the game. And it's too bad that we can't trick ourselves about the money thing more consistently and just focus on creating.
I know. Wouldn't that be... I'm watching Star Trek the Next Generation now with Peo, and just watching her brain expand to the idea of... it's effectively a moneyless system because they have replicators. Yeah. So once you have a replicator, well, once you can make gold, everything is valueless. And watching her sort of processing the ins and outs of this moneyless system, but then there are the Ferengi who have, you know, it's complicated economic lessons, but I just kind of sit around wishing we could have the universal basic income or some other way that we could do this art, and not just this art, like my friends who are quilters and my friends who are do crochet stuff. I just wish we could do this art that we all value and still have food on the table.
Yeah. I really believe in art for art's sake. And I wish our culture, our world culture, was all kind of on the same page in terms of the creativity for the value of humanity in a very fundamental way.
Yeah, that comes back to the whole, again, when we post our cakes and the people who aren't into it are like, but why? You know, it's all just the same. It all tastes the same. It's like, because it's happy making.
Yeah.
Because
it's life joy. And
because... Yes, I can make you a delicious cake that's just the chocolate ganache slapped on the cake, and it's going to be just as tasty as if I decorate it or not. But if I put something on that speaks to your fandom, if I put something on that speaks to your preferred color, something in your life, it's meaningful to you, and humans like that. Humans like those patterns. We like the things that make us happy. Why wouldn't we do it on cake?
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever someone says why, I'm like, why not?
That is a great way to think about it. Yeah, and I think that as the world actually is seeing an increase in things like depression and anxiety, and things like cake are one of the things that can make a big difference, because smiles and laughs and hugs are really a strong opposite experience from all the depression and anxiety and worry and stress. And if we all smiled and laughed once a day, it would make a huge difference. And that's what sugar art is about. It's about whimsy and fun and silliness and beauty.
Yeah, and it's not even necessarily directly about the sugar. I mean, because you're not supposed to eat the sugar flowers. I mean, you can.
Right.
Careful of wire, but I mean, this is the other thing.
They don't even taste good. Yeah,
exactly. Gum paste is the difference between edible and should eat. And I'm always having to give my friends permission to peel the fondant off. That is decorative. But then they think it's waste. And I've been framing it as, well, but it's not waste because it's not that healthy for you and your body's not a garbage anyway. So look at it as decorative. It's no different than an orange peel or a banana peel. It's part of the thing that you're eating, but it's part of the package that arrived. It just happens to be this beautiful package. And it's not like we have a shortage of sugar in the world, or even that sugar is a particularly, it's not like, well, we could argue with palm oil and some of these things where there's a high ecological impact. But as far as I'm aware, pretty much we're out, you know, it's not 1850 where,
you know, sugar pretty much grows like rice. Yeah,
exactly.
Pretty
so,
easy to grow.
Yeah. So I have no qualms about using it as a sculpting material. In fact, frankly, diabetically speaking, it's better as a sculpting material than an eating material.
So. Pretty equivalent to clay in that term.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, what's the difference between, you know, rock-based clay or sugar-based clay, you know, in terms of a medium? Why is one more legitimate than the other?
Yeah, because you can throw sugar on the ground and it'll go back to the earth just like clay.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We're recycling. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
I do take pride in how much, you know, my scraps and things like that I end up composting. Go to our local composting company, and then that goes to soil for local farms and consumers. Even if we were doing things like that, it would be great. Yeah, we stopped putting compost in our back area. We kept our own compost, but it was a little too enticing, I think, for all the local wildlife. And there's a company here that rides around on bicycles and collects compost.
Yeah, that's cool.
So we get our compost picked up by people on bicycles.
Oh, that is very cool. That is very Austin.
Yes, it's very Austin, very hip.
Cambridge has... we have green bins. So that's our, it's your yard waste / kitchen bin. But I've recently had to just convert it to just yard waste because the heat in the summer, it was growing maggots.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was gross. And because they only pick it up every other week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this is why I keep telling them. I'm like, no, because I've been on the phone so many times with hours of these guys. And I'm like, guys, there's some of these cities like Toronto and whatever, they've learned if you pick up recycling and composting more often than trash, people will, they'll sort the things.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it every other week for those things, then you're not motivating people to do it. And it's been so many running. We have apple trees in the backyard, which is great and wonderful during apple season, except there's more than I could possibly eat and freeze and jar and jam. And the trees are old and wormy, so we can't eat half of them anyway. And then you can only put it third full, or then the bin's too heavy. And it's turned into this colossal nightmare of now I'm throwing out food that could be composted because the compost is full.
Right. Yeah.
But none of it's cake. This cake does not really... I can't remember the last time I had to throw something out, a cake or cookie, that because it actually got moldy. I have a 4-year-old. So it's not a problem.
Although I have learned in my house with my non-cake cookie-eating family that if I put it in the fridge or store it for eating later, it's not going to get eaten. So I usually give it away or compost it right away.
Yeah, I've got friends who will probably gladly eat stuff. Although one time, I made, for my first collaboration, actually, and so far only collaboration, because I still have to do the one for Kyla coming up, I used my regular cake recipe because it was good, and my kids ate some of it, but because it had taken me a couple days to do it, and the kitchen had been hot, you know, to me, that's starting to be like a 5-day cake.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had all these little mini cakes, and so I put out word to my friends, I'm like, well, hey, anyone in the Cambridge area, if you want one of these cakes, you can come have it for free. But eat it within a day. And somehow me saying eat it within a day put people off. I'm like, it's still good. In fact, it's probably good for 2 or 3 days.
Right.
I'm just hedging.
Maybe longer if it's in the fridge.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I'm just hedging my bet here, and nobody came and got one.
Wow.
And people said, yeah, you weren't really selling it. You kind of made it sound like it was off. I'm like, it's not off. I'm just telling you that.
There's a shelf life.
And it's probably fine longer, but don't sue me because it's free.
Right.
So, and then I just felt too bad about the waste, so I ended up filling our freezer. We have what's for England a gigantic freezer. So the jellyfish cakes finally got eaten, like, you know, 3-4 months later at least.
Oh, I think I remember seeing the jellyfish.
The jellyfish cake, yes. It was for
Yeah,
that was the collaboration. And so partly I joined that collaboration because it gave me a chance to experiment with doing stuff like pouring gelatin and finding out that doesn't work as much as I thought it would. They look like...
I used gelatin on a jellyfish cake, and it was a time-consuming project.
Yeah. And there's a very fine line between tentacles and boogers.
That's true.
That was
I used a lot of paint to try to get around that. A lot of painting to. Yeah, I did it, and then I was like, it doesn't look right, so I painted it. Then I was like, it's not quite what I was going for, I think, because of the gelatin factor. So then I think it had like 4 coats of paint on it when it was all said and done to try to get the effect.
Mm-hmm. Because gelatin it's a more viscous liquid.
Yeah.
So it forms viscous looking drops if you have it like when I make my homemade gummy type stuff. I remember learning about this from watching Lord of the Rings commentaries. They were talking about how when they did the miniatures for when the Ents attack Saruman's tower, And the mm-hmm. water comes pouring in. They were talking about how difficult this was because on miniatures, when you have water spraying, you can only go so small with water drops. Then it's vapor. And so a small water drop on a miniature scale looks like a massive amount of water. And it doesn't look like water spray anymore because the scale is off. And so scaling with water is hard. And I really learned that. And when I've been working with gelatin and piping gel and stuff and doing water effects, I've really seen how this plays out, that there's, you try to make something look like drops and it looks like slime. It looks like boogers. It looks, mm-hmm. it looks gross. Yeah. Yeah, because the scale's wrong. And so that's one of those tricky things to try and do, try to make raindrops that don't look like someone just sneezed all over the side. Last time I went to San Antonio, when it was still a day of sharing, and I did a singing in the rain cake. And I spent, you know, however much long making the pole and making, you know, him dancing on the pole, but making the raindrops that are hitting the ground and making the rain that's dripping off him not mm-hmm. look like rivers of boogers took more effort than sculpting the figure.
Isn't that always the case where you have an idea of how to do a component of it and in your head it's going to work and you're pretty sure there's not going to be many issues, and then you try to do it and that thing is like the hardest part of the whole project. Mm-hmm. But I had this figured out in my head. Why is this taking forever?
And now you're committed to it. Like, it's not like you can wipe it all off and start again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was like a central component. It's not like you can do it without that. Yeah.
Right. Which is why we should do our experimentation when we're not on deadline. But when are we not on deadline?
Yeah, never.
Yeah.
Never. Although I will say that having, you know, running my own practice for my day job and doing cakes and cookies around that and still making time for family and volunteering and all this other stuff, I have mastered the art of how much can I accomplish in 2 to 3 hour windows. So I really, when I start projects, I map it out like that from the beginning. And if I always run into some issues where I have to borrow an hour here or there and move it to there or there, but I really have it down to a science of what am I going to get done in a 2 to 3 hour window. And then I've got X number of those windows in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 months before the project's due, so that I'm not staying up all night. Because Brené Brown says exhaustion is not a status symbol, or at least we shouldn't believe it is. Mm. So I remind myself that every day and make sure that I'm getting sleep. I am not the no sleep club.
I was actually thinking, looking at all the stuff you do, I was thinking, probably she just never sleeps.
No, I'm just a very precise planner.
Oh, I envy you. I mean, I could plan all I want. My kid sang for 2 hours in the middle of the night last night, so it didn't matter what planning I was doing. I was just laying there. At least I didn't have to get up for it, but I was just laying there in bed, hearing her, the monitor, singing songs. Singing the ABC song badly.
Yeah. Yeah, that would throw my planning off.
Yeah,
sure.
There's no planning around. Your child has decided 3:15 it's time to sing. There are reasons why this podcast is only every other week right now.
Hey everybody, it's Mike McCary here, and we have something new we're all very excited about. We call it Cake Prep, which is a series of multi-week courses held at my shop in Seattle. Each course is designed to be a complete start to finish on a particular segment of cake decorating, with class sizes being kept small at a limit of 6 students. Our first offering is going to be a 4-week course all about cake sculpting. So if you email us at cakes@mikesamazingcakes.com, I can send you a complete outline. And we hope to hear from you.
Speaking of experimenting stuff for cake shows, Jackie had mentioned last time about your queen bee cake with the earrings. And so I'd seen mm-hmm. the cake and I went back and looked at them. Oh my God, she's not kidding. Those were amazing. So how did you do those, if I can ask?
Yeah, I don't mind sharing. Mm-hmm. When I was designing the Bee Queen, one of the things I wanted to do was design her jewelry. It was actually really a fun creative process for me. I took a couple of jewelry classes in college and really enjoyed it, but haven't never been able to figure out how to do more of it since then. And that was a long time ago. I won't say how long ago I was an undergraduate. but so for this cake, I was really excited about the opportunity to make her jewelry. So I designed all of her necklaces and her earrings. So for the earrings, I wanted to somehow relay like an amber, you know, like the fossil amber, mm-hmm. and also do kind of a play on the bee concept. And so I used a mold, a silicone mold. And what I had done is cut out pieces of fondant in the hexagon shape, like honeycomb. And I painted it gold with gold dust and let those completely dry. And I sprayed some glaze on them so the gold dust wouldn't lift off. And then I poured into my teardrop kind of shaped mold, you know, maybe an inch and a half size, poured isomalt into it about halfway. It was just clear semi-isomalt that then I'd colored an amber color with gel colors. Then let that completely set. So it was sort of like halfway full. And then I laid I actually used piping gel to glue the hexagon shapes into the mold on top of the isomalt, then poured isomalt on top of that. So it's kind of sandwiching those in between two layers of isomalt.
Oh, that's how it had the depth. Oh.
Yeah, that's how they look like they were floating in the liquid. Or amber is what I was kind of thinking of, like almost like carved amber. If you took mm-hmm. amber and then carved it into those shapes. You know, it was a total experiment. I kind of envisioned it being suspended in there, kind of like things get suspended in amber, mm-hmm. but I wasn't sure if it was going to work. So surprise, surprise, it worked fine. And I don't think I would change anything if I did something like that again. I think I would follow through with that same kind of method. Gluing the pieces down to set isomalt worked well, because it wouldn't have worked to just sort of shove them into hot isomalt.
Right.
And then I use molds for the part that looked like it had metal hanging on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun. It was more fun to design sugar jewelry than regular jewelry.
Well, and they were exquisite. I mean, I'd seen the cake before, but I hadn't zoomed in to the earrings until Jackie mentioned it. And then I went and looked. I'm like, and this is what you miss by not getting to go to the actual shows and just scrolling through photos, is all that detail.
Yeah, I know. One of these days I want to get to one of the shows in your neck of the woods, because there's so many submissions, and just to walk through and see every little detail on all of them. I love detail. So I know that would just be like being in the art museum.
It is. And it's almost overwhelming. I feel like I go through and I look at these cakes. There was just so much of so much quality that I would then forget that I'd even seen beautiful thing. I've taken a picture of it, and I look at my own picture and I'm like, part of it may have been because I was sick this past time, but I look at the picture and I'm like, I have no memory. This one over here, I remember, because this one had this royal icing thing, and I sat around talking to Dawn about this royal icing thing. Or I definitely remember this one because it was the one Mike McCary said was his favorite. I mean, definitely, if Mike McCary says his favorite cake, you go look at that cake.
You figure out how to look at it.
Yeah. Right. I should find my picture of that one from the show notes and post that, the what was Mike McCary's favorite cake, because it was
a lady. You should. Yeah.
It was a lady eating. Is Carla? I don't know how to say her last name.
Puig.
Yeah.
Puig.
Yeah. And it was one of hers, and it was a lady eating cake.
Oh, I did see that one. Yep.
It was so, I could see why he told me why he loved it. And I went and looked at it, and you almost want to cry for how just amazing.
How much emotion.
Because it's, she just captured life in such a amazing way. And the fact that it's at a cake show and eating cake just made it funny and witty.
Yeah.
You know. So I remember seeing those ones, but because I had an interaction about them. But there were other ones I took pictures of, and I'm like, this is a gorgeously detailed, amazing little tiny royal icing thing. Look how, and I have no memory of taking this picture because there's just so many.
Well, and that's kind of like Jackie was saying, that my bee queen looked a lot like Zoe's, but who I know her name now. But I saw pictures from the spring show over there, because a few people posted, you know, 100 photos or whatever. And I diligently looked through all of them, but I didn't see that one. And I'm sure there's a lot more that I missed, because I can't imagine if there's that many cakes, both in the spring and the fall, that anybody gets a photo of all of the cakes. So there's not like a way to see every single beautiful cake. But then I managed to go find somebody. I looked through multiple, because when Jackie said it reminded her of a cake that she had seen over there, mm-hmm. I went and tried to find every cake, you know, through a couple different people putting albums up. I went through and looked at bajillion cakes, and all of them were amazing. I did find Zoe's cake is the one she was talking about, but I was like, gosh, I can't. There's just so many fabulous cakes that mm-hmm. were at this one show, and that's just the spring show, and then there's the fall show.
Oh yeah, but there are too many NECs. They're not even all at NEC, but there's too many cake internationals. I can't even. Jackie does them all because she does the Renshaw booths at them, so yeah. That's like kind of her job to go be at them all. But yeah, I just just so much, and almost like I fear if I kind of want to go to more as part of this podcast, but just, you know, once my kids are in school, I'd like to do more than I do, but I don't want to hit a point where it's every other week there's a cake show and I get cake showed out.
Yeah, and it takes the whimsy and the fun out of it. It's just like competing. Like, if you compete at every single show, then it no longer really is an explorative growth experience.
Yeah, if you're just trying to collect medals.
Yeah.
That's going to, I mean, okay, you know what, I'm not going to judge. If someone else finds value in that and that's what they want to do, that's fine. But, I mean, I like winning. Yeah. I like medals. But...
Yeah, because I guess some people might enjoy competing at every show and it wouldn't become stressful or they would get burnt out, but it seems like that would be a difficult thing to do and not get burnt out.
Yeah.
I feel like it's similar to teaching. I really love teaching, and I've done teaching in my psychotherapy career for a long time, but I really only want to teach things that I'm excited to teach. You know, I don't want to just hold a class because I think people might want to come to a class on X or Y. I want to make sure that I'm teaching something I'm excited about so that mm-hmm. when people come, they're getting like my passion for this thing. Mm-hmm. And some people are passionate about everything and love to teach everything. I personally am passionate about painting and certain skills like that. So I don't necessarily want to teach a class on something I'm not passionate about because I don't think it would be as fun for me, which means it wouldn't be as fun for the students.
Yeah, that's why I like to teach kids and beginners, because they're just excited because there's cake.
Because they get to touch it.
They get to touch it. I mean, well, beginners come in two flavors. Beginners come in someone who wants to get into this and is nervous and terrified. Those are really hard to teach, because to try and get them over that terror is a big hurdle in and of itself. Or the beginners come into it like kids do. I mean, there are also some kids who come into it with terror. I have to be the best. I have to make it precise. But not very often. And because I've had a kid who has that in her own life, I know how to sort of cope with that. But yeah, most of the time, kids and that other type of beginners, they come in and they just want to play. And they aren't expecting to come out with a perfect product. They want to have fun, and frequently, especially with kids, they want to eat it when they're done.
So, and they feel proud because they made something so cool that they get to eat.
That's right. And so that's why I find so much joy in doing it. There's not a lot of money in it. You're not going to get one of these $800 a day type classes, you know, because those are obviously professional level classes where people have an expectation that they're all going to come out with the exact same sculpture. And they want to learn the precise method and stuff. I honestly don't know if I'd ever teach a class like that, which is partly privilege. I can say that, you know, I don't need that money. I mean, money's good, but I'm not doing this business to feed myself or my kids. So I have the privilege of being able to be pickier about what
not
I do. Right.
Yeah.
But that's why I love doing the kids classes at shows like Austin. And that's why I'm trying to eventually start a business here for basically kids and my friends and sort of on a casual thing. I don't really want to teach how to start piping for a wedding cake business.
Uh-huh.
First of all, there's enough other people teaching that. and they can't make their classes fill anyway, so why am I going to stress trying to compete with someone who's going to do that better anyway? But I just really like getting people to play with their food and have fun with it and not necessarily have a perfect result, but to have the result that you're happy with. I love it when kids, you tell kids, here are the five colors and we're going to make these things, but you can make whatever you want. And so you're trying to teach them a ladybug and then they made a space alien.
Yeah.
It's like, awesome. That is, I love your space alien.
That's so awesome.
That's,
yeah, I have a friend here who was doing cakes, you know, kind of like me, and then realized that she really just loved teaching kids and started having summer camps and doing some after school stuff, and then wrote a kids baking book, and now she does these really fun kids classes for like miniature baking or gluten-free baking for kids. So she kind of puts a twist on it and makes it about something fun, like fairy tale baking. And the whole camp is about different things related to baking and decorating about mm-hmm. fairy tales. So it's kind of a fun educational, not just the baking skill, but then she'll also teach the kids about different things. So it's a fun model.
That is cool.
Doing yeah. pretty well.
I mean, I've had people ask me in the past, like, would I come with cake and decorating tools for whatever fee and the kids at the party can make the birthday cake. And I'm like, yeah. that's a great idea. And I don't have the energy to do that as a full-time business because birthday parties are a different scream yeah. fest. Like that's, I can just picture that's just a disaster waiting to happen. Whereas if they're coming to a class, generally they want to do the thing at the Austin kid classes, which you just did one. So, you know, you are getting some kids who are in the room because someone wanted to stick the kid in the room and go do a cake show. But most yeah. of the kids who take those classes, because they are $25 a piece, so that's not cheap. They want to be in that room. That's why I like teaching the advanced kids class, because those are the kids who desperately want to do something awesome. And they have a sort of primer idea, so you can skip how to roll a teardrop because they know how to roll a teardrop. And again, what you were talking about with the passion, when you find the kids who have passion, I'm not making money teaching those classes and I don't need to because it's just such joy. I mean, that's my happy place is teaching kids or adults, people who just want to come and they have a passion for it, but they don't have an expectation for a result. And it's all the perfect fittings of joy.
Yeah. And I feel like when any of us, whether we're adults or kids, when we can tap into that passion, it really feeds our, you know, our soul mm-hmm. and improves on life, you know?
Well, yeah. Like what we were saying about more art in our lives earlier that if you can stick a pretty flower on the cake and it makes you happy, why wouldn't you?
I know. Yeah. I often have people take my classes that aren't doing this for business. It's like they're coming to, say, one of my painting classes just because they love art. They want to do more creative things. And this is just another way that they can be creative. And they might do it for birthday parties and they might sell a little bit of sugar art, but they're doing the class mostly for their own well-being, for their own self-care.
Mm-hmm. So out of curiosity, when you're doing the painting, are you using like the same media for painting on a cake that you would do on a cookie, or are you using different, whether it's standing up or laying down or whatever?
I use the same paint because I've settled on products that work well for my style of painting. I'm using Rainbow Dust Pro Gels for my paints. I actually do use Everclear, which I know is tricky and the alcohol can be an issue, but if I didn't have access to that, I would probably be able to work around it, but I might just use regular paints and paper if I had to move away from kind of the painting methods that I've explored to work for me. But I use the same paints, but of course when I'm doing cookies, I use a royal icing because I think it tastes better than using fondant or like an icing sheet or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm working on painting on a cake, I'll do paint directly on the fondant. I'll paint on an icing sheet and put on, or a gum paste plaque. I'll do gum paste, let it dry, and then apply it like a plaque or two-dimensional but sticking out kind of element. And then sometimes I'll do rising transfers and paint them.
But with the humidity here, it's a little tricky because often I don't have time to wait a week and a half for a royal icing transfer to dry, a large royal icing transfer to dry. So mostly I'm doing gum paste, fondant, or straight royal icing on cookies. But my paint supplies are the same.
Yeah, because I was wondering about, like, painting on a vertical surface, to me, just my hand wants to fall off and go on strike at the very thought. Whereas painting on a flat surface, I can do.
Yeah, I prefer to paint on a flat surface. So if I'm painting on an actual, you know, vertical cake, I'll usually choose a simpler design. Also because here in Texas, even in the winter, I can't let cakes sit out for very long of the fridge. And so the painting needs to be a fairly quick design if I'm going to paint directly on the cake. But if I have a way to get around that where I can paint on a horizontal surface, then I try to get around having to paint directly on a upright cake.
Well, it's more nerve-wracking too, because it just feels like there's more room for accidental splatter and there's more room for me to make a mistake on the actual cake versus, not that it wouldn't be a pain to mess up the plaque that you just worked 4 hours. I don't know. Just psychologically to me, it just seems like doing it on the live cake is more terrifying.
I think it usually is, but I would say that the erasing method is the same either way.
Right. So how do you erase?
I use vodka for erasing.
Okay. I've gotten very good at scraping and re-blending and patching.
Yeah. Yeah. And water on fondant, water works fine as an eraser.
Yeah.
As long as it's not like a dark color. If it's black or dark brown, then water won't really lift it all the way off, but it'll work on most everything else. But water is not an option on royal.
No, it's not. No.
So you would have to have something like lemon extract or something that has some evaporative property.
Or that's where you stick a flower on top.
Re-ice or, yeah.
That's at that point, that's where I just
creative.
I'm sticking something else on, or I'm redoing that one. But
yeah,
that's, I mean, if it's competition, I'm redoing it. Let's be honest. If it's competition, you redo it. I've gotten very good in recent years of not redoing things that are not competition, of reminding myself no one will notice, no one will care. I can hide this. I can, particularly if it's just for photos, you just turn that side away or whatever. That was hard. That was really hard for me to, because I came to it more through competition than from selling or anything first. I had very much a Mike McCary and Nick Lodge can see what I'm doing at all times sort of terror. Yeah.
Perfectionistic mindset. Yeah.
Oh, I keep saying I'm not a perfectionist. I'm just committed to quality.
Yeah. Super, super high quality.
Super, super high quality that no one else is noticing. That's,
It took too many hours and made you depressed and crazy.
Using all the rude words. It's a phrase I got from my mother-in-law was because she was a very kind-hearted person who didn't swear often, but as my husband assures me that when she was very angry, she would just say the phrase all the rude words. So you can tell I'm still being civil if I say that versus actually just listing out, like, George Carlin style, the actually rude words.
Yeah, we all know what that means.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Anything else you wanted to say? I mean, you can go ahead and push your classes, because if they're not coming to the fall, people will have plenty of time.
Yeah, I have a class August 12th at Rebecca Shear Celebrations in San Antonio. So that's a half-day class, and it's a Great Gatsby-themed tiered cake, because it's a fun one to learn a lot of elements. Making a wafer sequence, like a headband, and using molds, and making gum paste feathers, and paneling a cake. So it's a fun one because it's all skill levels pretty much. That's actually my only class in the fall. I'm going to be at Cake Fair. If anybody's coming to Cake Fair, I'd love to say hi. I'll be doing a showpiece there with a few other awesome ladies, Avalon and Shannon Bonds and those folks. So it would be fun if people hear this and want to come by and say hi. And then I'll probably be getting a couple of painting classes together for the fall, but I'm going to wait and see if I survive all the collaborations and projects for the fall. My son's birthday cake, which has to always be epic. So that's usually a 3-week project. But it's all about the joy. It's all about the fun. And then I'm going to see everybody for the cake show in February for sure.
Yeah, I'm planning to come. I mean, I better. I have to get my kids' classes into Kyla soon. I need to design a new advanced kids' class because we did the dragons a couple years in a row.
So yeah.
I have some thoughts possibly.
About the science thing.
Yes. Well, so when I first did the advanced class and talked to some of them, there had been, they're interested in things like facial expressions and eyeballs. So I said, what if I did a class for you guys on, like, all we're going to do is make eyes on cookies and talk about how this one connotes anger, this one connotes sadness. You know, like, you surely must have seen that the drawing, you probably even have one around of the cartoon of all the faces.
Yeah.
So, like, that kind of thing, but, like, in googly eye faces, because I've done blog posts on how you can do expressive googly eyes just by tilting eyelids. So I'm thinking possibly something along those lines, because, again, it's good on cookie for kids.
Yeah, easy to transport and all that.
Right, yeah, because part of the goal of those classes is that the kids are leaving with an edible thing. So I need to get on that any day now. I'm going to get that stuff before Kyla kills me.
Yeah. Deadline's approaching.
Well, so there's the deadline for if you want to teach at Austin, which if it hasn't happened, it's imminent.
It's the 15th, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, I guess this show will come out in time for that, barely. So, yeah, people who want to get to teach the, you know, the full adult classes, they have to get their applications in. But because the kids' classes,
You're in charge.
I'm in charge of the whole unit. So, yeah, I'm scheduling them, I'm deciding who's doing what, and I'm, you know, in charge of the supply list and, like, all that stuff. Like I said, as you know, since you did one last year, pretty much Kyla knows I'm going to get it done. So I do get a little bit of leeway. She does know that I've got 5 weeks of kids at home in August that I'm not getting anything done because the UK summer break is only 5 weeks long. but yeah, I will, I'll put in the show notes. I'll get your class info and put in the show notes. So
That'd
we can,
awesome.
all 100 listeners.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually over half of them are in the Central Texas area.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, that would help. So I haven't gotten a lot of promotion on that one.
And otherwise, thanks for being on, and this has been great.
Yeah, that's been fun. Thanks a lot for having me.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors. And you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cakeformation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.